The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is my interview with the writer and director for Flea, Jonas Poher Rasmussen.
Oh, a little bit more up. Bare lidt. Så hvis du ligesom lukker øjnene nu,
ja.
Og prøver at trække vejret sådan dybt ind. Hvad betyder ordet hjem for dig?
Hjem er noget, som er trygt.
Kabul, les attaques des mujahidin repris.
Har du nogensinde fortalt din livshistorie før?
Vi skal ud. Det er nu.
Tsunami to ninja boshi.
Min dårlige samvittighed er, at min bror han bliver tilbage. Vi flygtede med menneskesmuglerne.
Vajekale!
Det værste mennesker i mit liv.
Har du fortalt Kasper nogle af de her historier overhovedet?
Nej. Det tager tid at stole på folk. Det går rundt. Og tænk tilbage. Så det er min fortid, og det er jeg ikke flygtet fra det. Jeg har heller ikke lyst. Jeg kan mærke, at der skal ske noget.
All right, Jonas, man, yes. Gotham winner for documentary. How you doing?
Yeah, well, pretty good. It was a great night last night.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I remember specifically coming up to you at Critics Choice and telling you, "Don't worry, this is not the one that you wanted to win."
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, hey, listen, I'm very, very excited to be doing this with you. I saw your film at its world premiere at Sundance, actually on a recommendation from a friend. He was telling me this movie's got some interesting buzz. There's some high profile producers behind it and people advocating for it. And I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot and see what happens. Man, here we are, end of the year. This film is still firmly in my top 10 of the year as one of the best films I've seen. So credit to you for creating this really powerful movie experience.
Well, thank you so much. Amazing.
Absolutely. So the first thing I want to start off by asking here is, I understand that animation, documentary filmmaking can take a severely long time. From the day that you first have the idea to the time that it makes its way to the screen. So can you talk a little bit about making a film in this format? I understand why specifically for this format, this story was chosen to be told this way to protect Amin. But can you just talk to me a little bit about like the experience of making a film in both animation and documentary?
Yes. You know, this is my first animated film. So it was a quite steep learning curve for me to, you know, learn the process of making animation and the craft. It took a long time to make the film. The first email I wrote my producer about the project, it was in 2013, and then 8 years later the film was done. So you know, it just takes time. But you know, it's also because of the format of animated documentaries, because animation is so expensive and there's not a lot of money in the documentary world, at least in Europe. It's getting better now, but back when we started, there wasn't a lot of money. So just to fund it was really difficult because no one in the documentary world believed that we could raise the amount of money we needed to do the film. Mm-hmm. So it took a long time. It took years to find the money, but which was actually pretty good for us or for me, because I had to learn how to do this. And we teamed up with this animation studio in Denmark called Sun Creature Studio. And I teamed up with the art director and animation director there. And slowly, you know, I started to learn the craft and how to work in animation. And at the same time, it was really helpful because Amin also needed time to slowly, you know, open up his story. It took time for him. Like, he hadn't told his story before, and he had kept it a secret for more than 20 years. So to give him time to slowly kind of figure out, okay, now I'm ready to do this. I'm going to open up slowly and go deeper and deeper into these memories. In the end, I think the process, the many years, was actually really helpful for the film in all.
Nice. The process of doing the animation, but I assume, I'm gonna assume here, you shot it as a documentary first, live action, and then translated that over to animation, because some of the shots in this are very grounded within reality. And then when Amin tells his story, there are some variations in the animation to make it more fantastical and give it a lot of style, if you will. So can you talk a little bit about the decision to have some of it based more within reality, and then what liberties you took with the animation to heighten the storytelling?
Yes. So all the interviews I shot on video, and all everything that takes place in the present was I shot on video, and we used that as a reference for the animator. So the animation director would have access to the video footage and could, you know, take detail from the video footage and put it in the animation so it felt authentic. And authenticity was really like a key word in the work with this. We really wanted it to feel real. We wanted to make sure that people, it should feel like, you know, you have this testimony underneath animation, and you should feel that authenticity in the visual style of the film as well. So it was really a process of finding a visual style that felt authentic. And we spent a lot of time, you know, finding archival footage, and a lot of it is in the film. And a lot of it we just kind of used for research, and we took elements from archival footage and just drew it and put it into the animation. So it felt like the animation and the archive came from the same world. So we have these different kinds of animation in the film. There's one that's 2D, very, you know, realistic to what things look like, trying to be very kind of authentic to what Afghanistan looked like in the 80s, Moscow in the 90s. And then there's this other style that's more expressive and surreal. And that's really, again, it really came from his voice. You know, you could kind of tell when he started to talk about something that was really difficult to talk about, when he kind of dived into the traumas or things he had a hard time remembering. And I thought, okay, but we need to see this change. You know, what you hear in his voice, you need to see that in the visual style as well. So we invented this more graphical, surreal animation style that kind of aimed for being more honest toward his emotion, like really diving into now he is angry, or now he is afraid, or now he is sad. And just instead of trying to be realistic about what things look like all the time, sometimes it was more about just being honest to his emotion. Mm-hmm. And so those were the two styles of animation we worked with in the film.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
There is a lot of variations here in terms of there's archival footage that's used, the documentary, the animation, everything that we talked about, but also too, in terms of the roller coaster of emotions that one experiences while watching Flea, there are moments of terror. There are moments of joy and elation. So it really takes you through this full journey that this character is going on. And one of the highlights of that is the usage of the song Take On Me by A-ha in this. It's just like such an expression of pure joy and uplifting feeling that I get when I watch this movie. I understand how hard it can be to get rights for music, especially in a format such as this with limited resources at your disposal. Can you talk about like getting the music rights to use that song and why specifically you wanted to use that song in the movie?
Well, you know, one of the first interviews I did with him, he mentioned that he had this Walkman, this pink Walkman that he was given by one of his sisters. Mm-hmm. And I then asked him like, but what kind of music did you listen to? And, you know, up to my surprise, he was listening to the same kind of pop songs I listened to in my childhood. Like, so it was A-ha, it was Roxette, it was Madonna, it was yep. Whitney Houston. So all these songs, I thought, okay, that was a surprise to me. So I thought, okay, but that's going to be a surprise for everyone that we arrive in Afghanistan, we arrive in Kabul to the sounds of A-ha instead of, you know, mm-hmm. some Afghan instrument. And I really wanted to have that in there. But yes, it was, you know, it is a big song, so it took a while, and it, of course, it cost some money. But actually, most of the bands were really helpful and really engaging, and didn't ask for an enormous amount of money. I think they could see this is a documentary; this is not a big blockbuster film. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to support that. So it was, you know, just luckily, you know, a lot of the music in the film, Roxette, A-ha, mm-hmm. Ace of Base, all Scandinavian bands.
Yeah.
So the tricky one was actually Daft Punk.
Oh, okay.
Which we have in the end of the film. And you know, Daft Punk own their own rights, so you actually need to get a hold of Daft Punk. And how do you do that?
Yeah.
I spent like from the very first time Amin told me the story of going to I don't want to spoil too much, but by the end of the film, he's at this place where there's a party going on. And the minute he told me about it, I thought about this Daft Punk song that has this melancholy to it, but also is kind of upbeat. And I thought, okay, I want this song. And from there, it took 3 years to actually get a hold of Daft Punk. And
wow.
at the end, actually, my producer said, it gave me a date and say, but if you don't have the rights for the song at this date, we need to do something else. So I just, you know, spammed the management for months. And then 2 weeks before that date came, I got an email from Daft Punk saying that they saw the clip and we could use it and for almost no money. And they loved it. So it was such a big relief.
You're talking about how all these people are willing to sign on to this project and lend their music or lend their names, Nikolai Coster-Waldau, Riz Ahmed being executive producers on this film. What do you think it is about the story of Amin that is touching people and moving people and is striking a chord here with audiences who have seen the film?
I think it's a very relatable story because, you know, yes, it's called Flee. It is a story about a refugee. It is a story about a flight from Afghanistan to Denmark. But it's even more so a story about finding, you know, a place in the world where you can be who you are with everything that entails. And I think that's something most people can relate to. You know, Amin had to flee himself all of his life. When he was a young gay Afghan boy in Afghanistan, he couldn't be openly gay. So he had to hide that. And then he arrived in Denmark and he was forced to hide his past so he's always had to, you know, hide parts of himself. It's really a story about finding a place in the world where he can be who he is with his past, with his sexuality and everything else. And I think it's something people can relate to. I think most people at some point in life go through a period where they kind of look for that place where you feel at home.
Mm-hmm. What was Amin's reaction to the final version of the film when he saw it for the first time?
The very first time he saw the film, he was very emotional about it. But he also said that he didn't know if it was because it was a good film. You know, you know, it's his story on screen. So mm-hmm. he was kind of, I'm very touched by this, but I'm not sure if it's a good film. So it meant a lot to him when the film premiered at Sundance, where you saw it and to see the reception and see that the story really resonated with people, it meant a great deal to him.
I love hearing that. And that's really, really nice. the score in this movie is also very instrumental in, no pun intended, in eliciting the emotions out of the story and taking the audience along this journey. So it's not just these songs you had to get the rights for, but also you have this background score provided by, and I hope I'm not butchering this, Uno Helmersson. And I think it's absolutely gorgeous, beautiful, evocative. Can you talk a bit about the collaborative process that you had with Uno there?
Yeah. No, but Uno is just an amazing composer. And it was really about, you know, going through every kind of sequence where we need music and really discuss what's going on here and how can we amplify that with music. So, for example, there's this sequence where Amin is fleeing Kabul, where Amin and his family is fleeing Kabul. And Uno kind of did this kind of pushing movement with, like, there's these strings that has this kind of wave, like, kind of sound. And then on top of that, you have this very thin violin. Mm-hmm. And that very thin violin kind of represents Amin, you know? And then you have this kind of pushing feeling as well of him getting pushed out of the country. So I think in every kind of part of the score, we went through a talk about what's going on here and how can we amplify that with the music, with the score. So, but Uno is just a very, very creative soul and amazingly talented.
Yeah. One of the questions that the movie asks, and you're talking about how it's a universal story and how it touches people. The question is, what does home mean to you? So I want to know, Jonas, what does home mean to you?
You know, I'm very aligned with Amin here. Like it's a state, mm-hmm. it's a place where you feel safe.
Yeah.
First and foremost, it's a place where you feel safe and where you are able to stay. So, and you know, making this film, I grew up very privileged. I grew up in a place where I grew up very safe. Mm-hmm. But making this film really made me happy about like having a home, having a place for me and my family where yeah, it just made me appreciate my home a lot more.
Yeah. The film has been selected as the Danish entry for this year's Academy Awards for Best International Feature. It also can contend for Animated Feature, Documentary, even maybe Best Picture of the Year, because I think it is one of the best films. I know many people I speak to also feel the same way. Can you talk a bit about what, just honestly, from the time that the film released, here we are nearly a year later, you're still doing press for this movie, going around to award shows, film festivals, working with Neon. Can you encapsulate what the last year of your life has been like?
No, but it's just been crazy, you know. It's just become a lot bigger than I had ever imagined, you know. Like working on an animated doc, like it is kind of a niche project, you know. Mm-hmm. So to all of a sudden to see it mentioned in all those categories is just bonkers, you know. To me, it's really crazy. And but I'm enjoying every step of it, and I just appreciate all the work people are doing to push this film. And it's amazing when you work so hard on something for so many years to see that it actually gets an audience and out in the world. It's just very, yeah, it's wonderful.
That's fantastic. And then a question that we love to end with here on the Next Best Picture podcast is, what is next? So is it more animation, documentary, live feature? What is next for Jonas over here?
Yeah, it's a very good question. You know, I'm trying to look at new projects, but all of this is a little distracting. So
of course.
yeah. So I'm kind of open. You know, to me, it's really the story. And if it makes sense to make another animated documentary, I'm totally open for that. Like it was a very, I really enjoyed the process of making Flea. If there is a wonderful doc coming my way, I'm open to that and for that as well. So I'm really, I have fewer ideas, but they're too fresh to kind of really put out there. I actually have an animated project I'm writing on right now, but it's very fresh still.
Well, whatever it is you end up doing, if the storytelling here is any indication, I mean, I'm sure we're all going to be waiting with great anticipation for it. Jonas, thank you so much for taking the time here today to chat with me about this incredible film. It is coming out in theaters finally on December 3rd for the world to see from Neon. And just once again, man, congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you.
All right. You have a nice rest of your day.
Yeah, you too.
Take care.
All right.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with the writer and director for Flea, Jonas Poher Rasmussen, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. Flea is currently playing in theaters from Neon. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.